Stay tuned for Occupied Territory America with Mike Fader.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
And this is Mike Fader on Occupied Territory America. If you want to join the dialogue, we have it running all week long, 24/7 at Occupied Territory on Facebook. It's a Facebook page, Occupied Territory. I have now set up a blog page so that everybody who's not on Facebook or can't stand Facebook, like I can't, can participate in these conversations. This was set up automatically down at the station, which I appreciate. It's good to have it, but I, you know, want to probably try to switch over to the blog on WordPress. Anyhow, details. What's important is today and ongoing is that the trial of Bradley Manning started this Monday, and we're going to be paying close attention to this this week and next week. We're going to have somebody on from the Brennan Center, a lawyer who's a specialist in these kinds of issues, secrecy, classified documents, leaks, that sort of thing. But this week we have somebody on who is an in-the-trenches kind of activist for a long time, and that's George Weber. Hi, George. You there? Did we lose him?
Yes. Can you hear me?
No, I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. George is George. I'm going to give people a little bit of your bio, right? First.
Sure.
Okay. George is born and raised in New York. He served three tours as a radio man with the U.S. Navy, 66 to 69, and during the Vietnam War, aboard the aircraft carrier USS Kitty Hawk in the Gulf of Tonkin. And held a top secret security clearance. His ship took part in Operation Rolling Thunder, the massive bombing campaign intended to cripple the fighting ability of North Vietnam, in which an estimated 100,000 to 200,000 civilians were killed. Upon separation from active duty, George became active in the movement to end the war in Vietnam and joined Vietnam Veterans Against the War in 1971. And he's been active with Veterans for Peace the past 10 years, and was also active in local environmental issues in Orange County, New York, for a long time. And he's a graduate of the School of Visual Arts in New York City and retired after 35 years in the photographic industry. So are you upstate now?
Yes, I am, Mike.
Okay. And have you been down to Fort Meade at any point?
No, I have not. Excuse me. I have not been down there, but members from Vets for Peace have been down there, and there is an encampment of veterans down there right now.
Let me ask you, maybe people, you know, this has been going on for a long time now. Maybe people need just a tiny refresher course on who Bradley Manning is and what he, I keep saying allegedly did, but now at this point, I think he's admitted to some of the charges. But who is Bradley Manning, and what is this all about?
Well, he's a young intelligence analyst, and the government's case against him is basically that he released classified documents. The worst charge against him is aiding the enemy. And the judge had ruled that the prosecution has to prove that.
Well, and, yeah. I mean, it's a court martial. They have to prove their case, right?
Right. They have to prove that case. But their point of view at this point is that it's simply releasing the documents, in their eyes, is proof of that.
Because it
would naturally fall into enemy hands.
Just the fact of it, rather than proof that some damage came from it, right?
Right, right. I think the larger question here is his reason for doing this.
You know, I want to backtrack just a little bit to really get the basics going, because there are some people, you know, that you know the way news is these days. Like what happened a minute ago is ancient history, right? So, Manning was in Iraq. He was a private, and he was a computer type. So they put him on computers, and he was engaged in combat operations, but as a computer person, right? How did that work?
Well, I think, you know, what happens is, no matter what your MOS is, you know, there are going to be times, and this is within the Iraq War, when you are going to be out on combat patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an incident where there was a roadside bombing, and the American forces got out without anyone being injured, and they were all celebrating. But apparently some civilians had gotten killed, and Manning was very despondent over this.
Hmm.
And I think that was a spark that kind of affected him very deeply. When he released this information, he made a statement when they asked him why he did it. He said, "I believed if the public, particularly the American public, could see this, it could spark a debate on the military and our foreign policy in general, as it applied to Iraq and Afghanistan. It might cause society to reconsider the need to engage in counterterrorism while ignoring the human situation of the people we engaged with every day. I felt I accomplished something that would allow me to have a clear conscience."
So this is why he did it. This is what happened. This is why he did it. And I think I remember reading also there might have been one or two other operations in which he provided information where civilians got killed. So he was appalled by this and decided that he was going to do this. And for some reason, which I don't really clearly understand, but I guess people have written articles about it or it'll come out in the trial, he had access to hundreds of thousands of classified documents, I guess just because he was cleared, right?
Yes. Apparently, I mean, he had a high security clearance to have access to all that information and to begin with.
Because some of this stuff was like State Department stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, normally, I mean, like, for instance, my clearance, I mean, I didn't have anything near that level of security clearance. The interesting thing is his relationship with this guy, Adrian Lameau, and the guy that outed him. There's an article in the Huffington Post the other day, and you know he testified the other day, and it said Lameau's chat logs reveal that when Manning said he had gender identity issues, Lameau responded that he was bisexual. When Manning asked if he was putting himself in danger, Lameau responded that he had never flipped for the FBI. Then Manning revealed seemingly everything about his background and the reasons for his massive disclosure of files to WikiLeaks.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. No, so this is somebody he was trusting because he was having troubles, with his own gender identity, you know, like with his sexual identity.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think he just like he spilled the beans completely to this guy.
And then this guy, Adrian, he's a hacker, right?
Yes. Yes. And he's convicted. He was a convicted felon as well.
Oh, so he had maybe reason to get in good with the authorities. You would give him.
Yeah, it's possible. It's very highly possible that the FBI flipped him, and
So, but for a long time, Manning was not admitting that he had turned all these documents over to Julian Assange. Right? He was not admitting that.
Yeah, at the beginning, I believe. Yeah, this is a guy that I mean, the young guy that was very conflicted about all of this stuff. I mean, that collateral murder video.
You have to explain all these details because sometimes I know what they are, but sometimes people forget.
Okay, that was a video where a helicopter gunship allegedly fired on some Reuters reporters, thought the camera was a weapon, and killed them. Okay, and that alarmed him. But what happened subsequent to that? A car pulled up with a father and his child, and they were going to help these guys, and they opened up on them. And then what really got him was what the helicopter gunship crew, the way they talked about it, how they referenced it.
It was basically like it was like a video.
Yes, there's a video on this. It's pretty, you know, it's out there now. And originally, I mean, I don't think that was even it was part of the database, but it wasn't technically a classified document to begin with. Seems to be the most damning evidence.
Now, these guys, people should understand that the video is taken from the point of view of the helicopter, right? Which is
correct.
Which is going in on these people and murdering them. And also,
that's right.
You're going to hear the audio. You should check this out yourself on YouTube. The audio is of them requesting permission and laughing about it as if they were actually playing a video game and not murdering innocent people. They were having fun shooting people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To broaden this out a little bit, there, you know, this whole concept of secrets, there were two excellent articles. I actually emailed them to you this morning. I don't know if you've got them yet.
I don't think so.
And there was one is by Norman Solomon and one is by Robert Parry. And Solomon references this article by a blogger at The New Yorker, Amy Davidson. And a quote from her, she says, "There will be times when it is a general or a president who needs to be held accountable for a crime. At those moments, what hurts the enemy is being able to say that we were the ones who didn't keep secrets." Mm-hmm. And I think that idea of us flipping this around with the insanity of how everything is secret today, everything is classified, the amount of classified documents. Parry, I think, was it Parry or Solomon here? Let me see.
Well, Robert, for people's information, Robert Parry, P-A-R-R-Y, is the editor and founder of a place called Consortium News. And that's you can find that on the internet. It's always a good place to get some articles about things like this. Consortium News. And you know, basically, George Weber is with us here today. What George is talking about is a serious problem, and it's gotten much worse, of course, under Obama. Is that they classify absolutely everything as secret and or classified, especially so that so many hundreds of thousands or millions of documents are classified as secret that it is inevitable. For them to easily prosecute, as they do, anybody they designate as a whistleblower. So this is almost turning people into criminals. Yes, you could say, don't say a word about it. It's a classified document. What we're talking about, anything from violating the worst violations of the Constitution to the most simple pro forma transfers of material from one place to another, everything is classified.
If you want to get an idea, I mean, here in this Parry article, of the sheer number of classified information, he's talking about a Freedom of Information request he made. It says, a letter from the Reagan Library said the archivist would not even begin to process my request for 128 months. That is more than 10 years. And then the process would involve time-consuming declassification reviews in which various agencies with equity interests would each have to sign off, along with whoever the sitting president is. And were I to die or lose interest in the interim, the process would go back to square one, waiting for some other interested American citizen to put in a new request and starting the clock again. In other words, we might all be dead before these records will be open to the public.
Which sounds like that's the point anyhow.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, same as and, though. Yeah. Go ahead. So with Manning, now where do we stand with this? Did he go into court and acknowledge that he did in fact leak these documents?
Yes, actually, he did admit to this stuff, and the judge actually gave him, a lighter sentence. But the government wanted to go ahead with the court-martial. They want to try to get him on the more serious aiding the enemy charge.
Is that a capital offense?
It could be. He could be looking at life in prison. Mm-hmm. If he's convicted of that, or possibly the death penalty. I don't know if they'd push it that far, but it goes to that. And here's the other thing,
yeah,
Mike, that I have to bring up that really bothers me. Amnesty International, like, and this is in Europe, refused to support him.
Hmm.
And there's an article. There's an article online about this, and I think a Counterpunch. He was allegedly named as the Grand Marshal at the San Francisco Gay Parade.
Mm-hmm.
And at the last minute, they decided to revoke that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, said that basically what he did was harmful to the country. And this larger issue is about the liberal institutions that we've depended upon, you know, for most of our lives and, you know, for years before that, are failing us.
Like, for instance, what?
Well, the press, organizations like Amnesty International, and I'll give you a quote from Chris Hedges that mm-hmm. I think sums it up. He says, "The gravest danger we face as a nation is not from the far right, although it may well inherit power, but from a bankrupt liberal class that has lost the will to fight and the moral courage to stand up for what it espouses." And I think the press is a good example, because if you look at, think about what's going on with Manning now, and contrast it to 1971, to what happened with the Ellsberg case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have the New York Times ombudsman actually, you know, was complaining that the Times was not giving adequate coverage to the Manning trial.
Oh, no,
I mean,
Yeah, they were definitely burying this
trial. Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of thing, you know, and you think back then during the Ellsberg trial, I mean, it's the fact that they took these documents and actually published them. I mean, it's almost inconceivable. The lapdog media we have today actually going out on a limb and doing something like that.
Well, you know, if the Times did something like that, exactly like that now, they would probably arrest 10 reporters from the New York Times and throw them in jail.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, Obama has unprecedented what he has done. He has prosecuted 6 whistleblowers. That's more than any president in history within his administration. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Do we have any idea why Amnesty International, of all places, did not support Manning?
Well, that's a good question. I heard that the... I think in the article referenced something that the woman who was in charge this is I think in Europe, mm-hmm. yeah, Catherine Ashton, it said, oh yeah, only the naive could expect the U.S. authorities to treat Manning leniently. But what about here in Europe? Catherine Ashton, the EU's foreign policy chief, is a fearless defender of human rights when it suits her. Happy to champion political prisoners in Iran and Ukraine, she is prepared to overlook persecution when it is carried out with the approval of her bosom buddies in Washington. There is little doubt that Manning has been imprisoned because of his sincerely held political beliefs. So it is baffling that Amnesty International has so far declined to consider him a prisoner of conscience and to undertake a major campaign for his release.
Well, baffling, I guess baffling is the word, because otherwise people, you know.
Yeah, it actually references here, for most of last year, Amnesty's U.S. office was headed by Susan Nossel, mm-hmm. who had just finished serving as a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State under Hillary Clinton.
No kidding, really? That's what that was?
Yes.
Well,
yeah, it is unthinkable that Amnesty would choose a senior aide to Robert Mugabe as director of the Zimbabwe team, unless that aide had renounced Mugabe first. Nossel, to the best of my knowledge, didn't speak out against how Clinton had cozied up to dictators in Egypt and Saudi Arabia.
Now, here
Why on earth did Amnesty hire her?
Here I am thinking along, I guess, with maybe 95% of the people listening right now, that Amnesty International is this pure, separate, unattached, nonprofit organization, which watches out for the rights of prisoners and for the oppressed all over the world. And yet they have somebody like that in charge makes me think twice about them, makes me think 5 times more about them. Let me ask you this question. When it comes to, because people make the inevitable comparison between Ellsberg and Manning, and Ellsberg himself has said that he feels Manning is doing what he did, right? But
yes.
But Ellsberg, when he divulged that information about stuff, first of all, well, I don't want to make all these qualifications, but the main point is this. When he leaked the Pentagon Papers, all of that was about the Vietnam War, right?
Correct.
It was compiled.
So that information was compiled by Robert McNamara. That was going to be a primer on how not to fight a war. It went back in five presidencies.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed that the government lied to the American people about what the real motives were in Vietnam.
Well, so that's something we all know. By one book I wanted to recommend, because I saw it just by accident the other day, lying on top of a bunch of books for sale on the street, is... I forget the exact title of it is, but it's called A Bright Shining Lie. If you want to read about
it. Wonderful book.
Fantastic book. Excellent. About America's involvement in Vietnam. One of the best books ever written about our involvement.
John Paul Vann.
John Paul Vann. Bright Shining Lie, John Paul Vann, America's involvement in Vietnam. I forget the author. Is it Sheehan? Is it Neil Sheehan? I don't know.
I believe it is.
So it's a great book to read. Meanwhile, here's the point, though. What Manning released was... it's as if he didn't... Now, here I'll be a devil's advocate a little bit, right? He didn't release just information about our illegal occupations, invasions, and our lying about going to war. He released every single thing he could get his hands on, including State Department negotiations. And now I have a listener from New Jersey who calls me frequently, one of the most intelligent listeners I have, and a decent guy, you know, basically radical himself. But he has a son who works in the State Department, who says, who told him specific instances where some of the documents that Manning released did, in fact, cause great harm to State Department negotiations, secret, of course, but negotiations that would have had to do with perhaps installing democratic governments in places or doing this or doing that was good for people in various places. It's a scattershot approach. I mean, he just released everything.
Maybe it might not
be so hard. You don't know what the government's got up their sleeve to prove that maybe some harm did come from what he did. I'm just
So far, they haven't been able to do that. From what I've read, there's been no instances of anyone's life being lost or threatened as a result of that. However, I your point is well taken. I think the release of the collateral murder video, on the face of it, would have been powerful enough to begin with.
Mm.
It's the largest dump of classified intelligence in American history.
Probably in anybody's
history. There's no denying that.
Yeah, I think it's like a world record for something like that. And to me, that's the only thing sometimes, it's maybe the main thing, if the only thing that actually sort of bothers me sometimes is that the indiscriminate release of things. I mean, he didn't have time to go through every document and think about what its repercussions would be. But it's almost as if he had like an explosion of revulsion about his own government or about something. But apparently,
well, I think a lot of us who have served in the military have those feelings and still have them today to a certain extent. I know that. Frontline had did a documentary. It was a short documentary on him, and in the beginning, the entire documentary basically was focused around how troubled he was. And never once during the documentary did they mention that possibly what he did was based on a crisis of conscience.
Not one time. That's interesting.
Yeah, they never brought it up, and. This is the thing, you know, getting back again to responsibility of a free and liberal press, a law, you know, when they're dropping the ball. And I see this stuff going on within the Obama administration, and I know plenty of liberal Democrats that are giving this guy a total pass. And I know they would have never done this if Bush was still in office.
Let me ask you this question. You go back a ways and about the same way as I do. So, you know, Vietnam and the whole thing, you served there. I did my best to get out, whatever. But, you know, I did my time on the streets getting bashed over the head by cops. A different kind of combat, nothing like yours. So, but there we are. We go back to this era, this time when Ellsberg could do this. Nobody gets arrested or nobody's phone logs get requisitioned, or if they did, it's as soon as revealed and fixed, you know, by a Senate committee. You got people like Nixon violating the Constitution all over the place. He gets, he gets driven out of office by decent judges, decent Congress people, decent senators. I know this is a really hard question, but what has changed from that time to this time that the general public seems to be A, passive, or B, agreeing to their own demise in terms of being in a constitutional democracy? What happened?
Well, I think, you got to remember also with the Ellsberg case, the reason that case was thrown out of court because Nixon overstepped his reach and had the plumbers raid Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. And that's what threw that case out. I mean, Daniel Ellsberg was looking at over 100 years in prison.
So illegal collection of evidence then.
Right. That's what ended the whole thing was a mistrial. The judge declared a mistrial. But what has changed? I think basically what Chris Hedges has been talking about over and over again is that either we've taken our liberal institutions for granted, we've taken our politicians for granted. We think that just because someone's a liberal Democrat that they're going to act like one. It's not the case.
Or at least even if they say they are, that's enough.
Yeah, exactly. I could give you a specific example. I got an email the other day about our new congressman up here who unseated this Tea Party Republican, Nan Hayworth. This guy's name is Sean Patrick Mahoney. And there's an email out. Everybody's outraged. He voted for the Keystone XL pipeline. He's pro-fracking. He wants to privatize the Tappan Zee Bridge. He wants to roll back the financial reforms of Dodd-Frank. He voted to cut $20 billion from SNAP, which is the food stamp program, over 10 years. And he voted for CISPA, the cyber spying bill.
This guy's a Democrat?
This is a Democrat. This guy campaigned. He's a Clinton Democrat. And there were far more progressive candidates running in the primary than this guy. But the money was poured into this guy. You know how many flyers we got in the mail from this, from the DNC on this guy? Clinton campaigned for him. And he won. And now, for all intents and purposes, I mean, this guy is worse than the Republican before him. Far worse. And he hit the ground running and started to do these things.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think so. When you ask, what's changed? I think basically the politics is so cynical. I mean, that's what Occupy is all about. I am astounded that so many liberal and allegedly progressive Democrats still have faith that they are going to deliver us, that they are going to save us, and it's just a complete pipe dream. It is not going to happen.
Well, on a practical basis, and I've been in the middle of this kind of mess for a long time now. During last fall, I had Jill Stein on my show a couple of times on Sirius and on this show. I ardently supported third-party candidates and a third-party candidate for president. And, of course, what happened was astounding vituperation and anger from my regular listeners and people who said, people get carried away during an election, especially a national election. They said, you could risk the presidency. I wish I had the the power to risk it. But they were attacking me for saying that, and of course, the bottom line to all of this, as you know, is the lesser of two evils argument.
Exactly. And we've been hearing this for a while. Someone sent me something recently about election reform, and it was from Citizens Action. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would feel more comfortable about this initiative if I saw one third party endorsement on there, but it's all Democratic associated and labor groups and things like that. And I said, if election reform in this country, we could start by allowing third-party candidates to be able to debate. Jill Stein and Cherry Hockler tried to get into the building, and they arrested them and handcuffed them to chairs for 8 hours with plastic handcuffs.
Yeah, now you understand, we're talking about two women, one of whom is a doctor and the other is an activist who started out very poor.
Who are presidential candidates on 85% of the ballots in this country.
And who received, I think, and I'm guessing now, is it close to a million or more votes? Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
something like that.
This is who gets arrested, and you know the history as well as I do, and it goes back a ways, but not that far. Is that Democrats and Republicans got together a couple of decades ago, or maybe it wasn't that long ago, and made somehow an agreement. First of all, they took the debates away from the League of Women Voters, and they made an agreement between the two major parties. It's like price fixing, that nobody but they would be allowed on the stage, so that you never really know. And So what would you say to people when they keep talking? But like the other day, I had a similar experience. I go down to my building, and I got a guy. He's got a guy down there. He's smiling. He's shaking everybody's hand in the lobby of my apartment building, a big apartment building in New York. And he's saying, "Are you a registered Democrat? I'm running for city council, right?" You know, I mean, if there's a hack hatchery, worse than the New York City Council, maybe it's the New York State Legislature. I don't know, right? This is hack paradise. So. You know, I mean, these people are really something. So this guy, he's handing out a leaflet, right? So he says to him, he said, "I'm not a registered Democrat. I wouldn't be that in a million years, but my wife is," right? You know, so she says yes. And he says to me, "Are you a registered Democrat?" And she grabs me because she knows, right, from long experience, like, shut up, you know. So she gives me the little squeeze, you know, like around the elbow where the nerve is. First of all, I say to the guy, I look at his leaflet, and he says he's proud to be running, and he believes in all the liberal, the upper left, blah, blah, blah. He's going, "Liberal, I'm proud to be running. I grew up in this neighborhood. My father was poor, blah, 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 blah." Not one thing on that leaflet said where he stood on anything. So I went to, I went to the super of the building and said, "You know, you can't let these people in here like that. You don't let them vacuum cleaner salesmen." You know what I mean? So it's not our government anymore. How does it get to be our government?
Here's part of the problem, I've heard other people talk about this, that, you know, the Democrats, the way they are at this point, they keep using the Republican Party, and believe me, I mean, I'm not saying they're not bad.
Oh, they're bad.
You know, they're nuts. They're terrible. But the Democrats, the way they are now, depend on this crazy Republican Party who is out of control to make them look like the good guys.
Yeah. Oh, here comes the boogeyman. You better vote for me.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And while everybody is looking to the Democrats, you know, and afraid, or actually their attention is cast on these Tea Party Republicans who they view as crazy, the Democrats are passing through this legislation. I mean, look at what I just told you about this guy that just was elected to Congress. I mean, if you saw that, would you believe this guy was a liberal Democrat?
Well, who says he's a liberal Democrat? He says he's a liberal Democrat.
Exactly. Exactly. They bill themselves as to be liberal Democrats. But, you know, in reality, they're Republicans.
Well, you know,
for all intents and purposes.
You know, I feel the same way about Obama, but then it gets complicated. I mean, you know, people. But if you look at the whole thing and you go over his whole record for the whole time he's been in office, you could pick out several things that are really quite striking that a liberal would approve of, or even a leftist, or even a radical approve of.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like his Supreme Court appointments, attitudes about immigration, about gun laws, about things like this. But it's always baffling and extraordinary to see him cave in on issues that are actually even more basic than that. You know, more general.
Well, sorry to interrupt you.
No,
the
okay.
other stuff, like the NDAA and things like that, and the unprecedented attack on civil liberties, which, you know, he puts this kind of stuff in place, eventually the Republicans are going to get back in power, and they are going to go hog wild with this stuff.
Well,
he's
going hog wild enough. I mean, what's today's...
hog wild enough, exactly.
The article in the paper today, quoting The Guardian, which... Why is it that a British newspaper has to tell us what's going on in our country? Why is that,
precisely,
George?
Well, there you go. There's the failure of another liberal institution of this, you know, the Fourth Estate is failing us.
Man. So meanwhile, The Guardian publishes this article, which was also now, by the way, top secret leak from somebody, maybe in the Justice Department, right? Somewhere leaked this information to The Guardian, and I'm sure they're going to be, you know, sending lawyers and U.S. Marshals after these people, right? And maybe Glenn Greenwald can't come back to the United States. I don't know. So the Times quoted The Guardian today. What happened is, and people may not be aware of this, but they'll be hearing all about it now, but pay attention to The Guardian online if you really want to get your information. Verizon was compelled by the Justice Department under a secret judge's ruling of a FISA court to turn over the phone logs for millions, what turns out to be millions of Americans who were involved in any way in businesses or doing business in any way, and didn't even say overseas. It didn't even say for what reason. They just got a free pass, and Verizon was made to do this, although they may have been very cooperative. I don't know. And it's just that's just the tip of the iceberg about what's going on here. And this is under Obama.
Yeah, I have this article right up in front of me on the computer screen. I've seen it. I saw it this morning. The thing is, you know,
we should finally get back to Manning after a little while. But go ahead.
Okay. But the question is, when I hear, you know, liberal Democrats and alleged progressives talk about this and say, you know, well, you know, we have to vote for him. He's our only choice. Yes, but how about nudging him a little bit? How about getting out there and making him do it? Like FDR, the whole thing is, you know, if you want something done, make me do it. Hmm. And, you know, he didn't enact a New Deal out of the goodness of his heart. There was a lot of labor and progressive and socialist activists out there forcing him to do this stuff. The climate, you know, the political climate was such that they made him do it. The progressive left in this country is asleep.
Well, maybe the magic word, what you just said, there are two things I think that explain all this, and I guess we do have to get back to Manning after a minute or two, but if you just tuned in, you're listening to George Weber, who served in Vietnam, later on became very active in the movement against the Vietnam War, and then Veterans Against, what exactly is the name of it, Veterans Against?
Well, there was Vietnam Veterans Against the War.
And then later on, what
originally.
Is it?
Originally, and then Veterans for Peace.
Right, Veterans for Peace. And so the point, the two magic words here are labor and the draft. So that's three magic words. In other words, there was a draft in those days. Millions of young Americans from any class and any color were threatened with losing their lives and with having to go over to some place and murder a bunch of people that we had no business being, A. And B, labor unions were extremely strong during FDR's time and even during Vietnam time. Labor unions are practically headed for extinction, and there is no draft anymore. And this is why people don't personally feel the pain necessarily, but later on they will. It's all frogs boiling slowly in a pot, but we don't feel this pain. In other words, our son, our father, our whatever it is not going to go off and get killed for no good reason. They volunteer.
No, you have the volunteer army. You have about 1% of the population making the sacrifice. I can tell you, I went to an Occupy labor consortium down at the CWA hall in Manhattan a couple of years ago. And I got up and I asked this question to representatives of CWA with the Communication Workers of America. And I asked, why did organized labor give Obama an early endorsement without getting any kind of concessions for it? No one could answer my question. And there were other people in the audience that wanted an answer, too. But nobody could answer the question.
Lesser of two evils, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But to get back to Manning.
Yeah. So now we have this trial, and the trial is probably going to take a while, and they're going to try to prove that what he did aided the enemy, which could maybe either land him in jail for the rest of his life or could be a capital offense. I don't know. And that's what the whole case is about now, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, he already pleaded to most of the other charges, you know, dumping the information, et cetera. I wanted to read one comment from a Veterans for Peace spokesman. And Bradley Manning is a hero who wanted to aid the public, not a traitor who wanted to aid the enemy, said Jerry Condon, a spokesman for Veterans for Peace. It is a shame that our nation did not pay more attention to the information he shared with us 3 years ago. Many lives could have been saved, hundreds of Afghani civilians and hundreds of U.S. soldiers. Now, I always took the position when Daniel Ellsberg released those Pentagon Papers, he saved countless thousands of lives by doing that.
On both
sides.
He
stopped the insanity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I can understand the affinity that Daniel Ellsberg has with Bradley Manning.
Mm-hmm. So as far as Manning goes right now, obviously there's nothing we can do. People can't storm the gates of Fort Meade and release him. So,
well,
you know, that's not going to happen. So, you know, but
demos, and you know, there are actions, and
but basically, he also, I mean, his he needs support. I mean, he's got a legal team, right?
Oh yes, he has a legal team. There's a website set up, you know, and you know, there's a fairly decent support network behind him, and also there's an initiative to get him nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah,
and when you think about
that.
It, think about it, contrast it like in this light. We have a president that won the Nobel Peace Prize but keeps a kill list. And Henry Kissinger, who just won a Democracy and Freedom Award, won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, they did.
Something's wrong.
They gave him the award on the USS Intrepid at the museum down there, which is a private organization. And they honored him and they honored David Koch at the same time.
Yes.
And
yes.
He got the award, Kissinger, for promoting democracy and the values of freedom in the world, which makes me think that my head may actually be on backwards.
Exactly. This is a guy that's wanted for murder in several countries.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so here's Manning, and eventually I think the government may or may not prove its case. I hope they don't prove its case. I mean, are they going for Broke on one charge, or are there lesser charges? He admitted the other charges, so he'll be in jail for a long time. Yeah. So it's.
As it stands now, I think he could be looking at it. Even if he's not convicted of the more serious charge of aiding the enemy, he's looking at, you know, could be looking at 20 years in jail.
You know, I'm thinking if I was a lawyer, what I might bring up, and maybe David Coombs already did bring this up, is when Manning was being tortured, and I don't mean the same kind of torture that was happening, let's say, in CIA dark prisons, but when he was being basically tortured down in the Marine prison where he was, right? Where he was being held. And this was at the height of it. You know, he was, they wouldn't let him wear clothes. You know, they kept his lights on 24 hours, whatever it was. They were basically torturing the guy, you know. And they
That's one of the reasons I believe the judge allowed, you know, him to plea and gave him a little bit lighter sentence on the, you know, was going to give him a little bit lighter break on the other charges. But they wanted to use that, his defense, to get her to drop the charges, but she wouldn't go for it.
Yeah, I remember thinking at the time when that was happening to him, and it was so outrageous, finally somebody is allowed to, you know, poke a microphone in the president's face, like Obama. And they said, what do you think of this behavior that's going on down there about Bradley Manning? What do you think about what's happening to Bradley Manning? And the president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, who actually is the ultimate authority if you're having a military court, right? He says, it seems appropriate to me. And now I'm thinking, if I'm the lawyer, I'm going to say, where do you want to find a new jury? Italy? Zimbabwe? You know what I mean? That the jury pool, the United States of America, is poison when the commander-in-chief of the armed forces says it's okay to torture this prisoner, this defendant.
That's a big point. That's a very excellent point. And the thing is, you know, you look at it. Americans seem to have, on the face of it, you know, no problem with this kind of stuff going on, like in Abu Ghraib and places like that. And they don't seem to be bothered by what's happening to Bradley Manning. And if you demonize somebody viciously enough, you know, they become the enemy, and then it's all okay.
Maybe part of it is, I mean, these things have multiple strands. I mean, some of it could be just plain homophobia. But I mean, after all, this guy was like, you know, Sergeant Rock and was the captain of a football team somewhere. He wouldn't be treated like this.
No, not particularly. No. I think it's the whole ball of wax. I mean, it's just... There's a lot of different facets to this.
So what would you advise people to do? You know, this always happens to me. You know, I've got this Facebook page. I'm on Sirius. I'm on this station all the time. And what happens is all this news comes in all the time, and it's like a tidal wave. It's a tsunami of bad, depressing, despairing news. So I'm trying to search around all the time for whatever I can find that's good news here and there. And sometimes things pop up. Like just the other day, the Connecticut State Legislature passed 134-3 a bill, which will be signed by the governor of Connecticut, allowing foods to be labeled as GMO. In other words, I'm searching around for good news. Can you give me anything related to the Bradley Manning trial that we could call a positive movement, or that we could contribute to making a positive movement out of this?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that, as I said before, excuse me, I don't think that we can look to our elected officials to do the right thing. It takes average people like us to step forward, mm-hmm. to step up and do what's right. And that means getting out there and supporting Manning, or getting out there and holding elected officials' feet to the fire. And I get to point that, especially on the progressive side of things, that these guys don't care about us because they take us for granted. Well, they're going to vote for us because we have the Republicans, you know, the boogeyman in the closet. And unless people get out into the streets, or they make it known to these people that, hey, you know, we're not going to support you anymore. Mm-hmm. We need a third party in this country that represents working people. Labor is almost dead. I mean, we need a resurgence. I mean, look what's happening overseas, Turkey, Spain. Those people, I think what's happened, it hasn't got bad enough here, Mike, yet.
See,
for that to happen here.
That inevitably, it seems to be the conclusion. It comes to that in my own head, and I hear other people who are wise on this subject, who have paid attention to history. It's almost the same situation as somebody who's a drug addict or an alcoholic. Until you actually land on the actual ground and break your nose and bleed and you're practically dying, then you don't get up. You know, you just keep stumbling along in an addictive trance. And we're addicted to consumerism. We're addicted to imagining we have a democratic process when we don't anymore, that we have representatives that give a shit about us. We're addicted to this. And until we actually hit bottom, unfortunately, I think that's the way it goes. It's happened many times before in history. Things have to get so bad before they get better. And I don't know. I mean, you know, people like you, and I only make these contributions on the air here, but I mean, people like you who are out in the trenches there, who go to demonstrations, who write articles all the time. By the way, George, you don't have any kind of like a subscription thing that people can subscribe to?
No, actually, I don't have a blog or any of that stuff. Okay. I send out emails to folks and stuff like that, but I don't even have a Facebook page. I share my wife's, you know.
Well, but, if people want to catch George Weber's virus, whatever he has, the radical virus, get in touch with me and I'll hook you up, you know. So meanwhile, I mean, you know, that's what we have to do. We have to keep trying, even though it looks very despairing. But it is insanely frustrating for people who see clearly what's going on, and I believe that you do and I do and a lot of people listening to me do, and you see really no changes, but you only see things getting worse. And then you have to finally conclude what you just said, I believe, is that until things get very bad for most, I mean, very, very bad for most people, I mean, no food, no housing, arrests, army patrolling the street, then maybe we're just going to lurch along watching our flat screen TVs and getting our asses fried by the government, you know. Anyhow. All right, George Weber, listen, I really appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right. Another time, we'll talk some more. I mean, this trial is going on all summer and who knows into the fall. We'll talk again. Thanks.
Okay, man. Thanks a lot.
Okay, you too. All right. So we only have a couple of minutes left of the show. I've got 5 minutes. You hear it. You heard what you heard. This is the way it is. I mean, Bradley Manning, yeah, there's a lot of things going on there. I don't like that he dumped every document in the world into newspapers all over the place. There probably are some times when the government needs to negotiate or conduct its business in secret. This government has gone way too far. We're talking about 100 times further than it needs to go. It's really one of the major steps towards dictatorship, and we are not on the road, but we are well down that road as far as somebody's concerned, as far as I'm concerned, who grew up believing in an American democracy. And when I was growing up, I saw more democracy happening than I see now. It's getting tighter and tighter and tighter. They're tapping your phone. They know where you are as soon as you open your cell phone. This is the downside of technology, right? All this stuff is happening all the time. And the president, I mean, and you know, he'll, and this guy, either he's crazy or he's a liar. One of the two. Take your choice. I mean, he will make speeches like he did at the National Defense University saying, we have to look into this legality of drones. We have to look into this. We have to look into that. We have to look into all these things that the Justice Department is doing. We have to look into Guantanamo. Bullshit. Watch what the man does. Not what he says. What he says doesn't mean anything. Anything. What he does is important. What he does is important. Who he appoints, what actual moves he makes. But what we have to do is just keep trying. And even though the general American public does not seem to be interested in a third party, which it desperately needs, doesn't seem to be interested in saving the Constitution, which it desperately needs to preserve democracy, people who know what's going on have to keep talking about it, have to keep showing up, like George says. There is no other alternative. I really don't know what else to say, but that's what we do here every week. And if you want to get involved in this Facebook page until I expand it into the blog, it's Occupied Territory and Facebook, and that'll take you there. And I post all kinds of articles. I posted one this morning too. Forget about the Democrats. Yeah, the Republicans are worse. The Democrats, not much better. We need a third party. We need to get the money out of politics. That's why Occupy was so important. That's why this show is called Occupied Territory. All right, so I will see you next week when we have a lawyer on to talk in detail about everything that's going on at the trial of Bradley Manning. Thank you. Because I went wrong.